Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started.
We're excited to jump into the next section of The Moffats by Eleanor Estes. I wanted to really quickly just read this quote from the back of my book. It's from the library journal, so clearly they like read it and did a review on it. But I think it like perfectly describes what I think about Eleanor Estes and how she gets into the minds of children. It says, the author has succeeded in conveying the large significance of small events in children's lives as children experience them. And I love that because it's so true. She has gotten into their minds, and she helps us remember how as children, these things seemed so huge to us. And we look back now, we're like, oh, that maybe wasn't that big of a deal, whatever. But as a child, it seems really big. And you remember all the feelings and all the emotions and everything. And so, and she brings the everyday things and makes them big and sweet and important as they appear to a child.
That's totally true. And I didn't really think about that. I mean, you've mentioned it before, but like in several of the chapters for this week, it was like, I can remember as a child, little things that shouldn't be scary, scaring you to death.
Oh yeah.
Like little things that you may have done wrong or a mistake you made. And it's like the end of the world.
Yeah, how, you're pretty sure.
Yes. And like in the last chapter that we're going to do, the mom is just like, the kids are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we did this. And the mom's like, well, it's okay. Like, yeah. What are we going to do? It is what it is. What are we going to do now? And so,
yeah,
anyways, it turns out okay, but it's just crazy. And it's like, you're right. It's, she takes these tiny little things that like nothing that happens to them is that big.
Yeah.
It's just little, but
they're big to them. And so to us as readers, we're like, oh, this is important. And then you step back and you're like, oh, it's just little, but it's also, it helps you to understand children. It helps you to understand ourselves.
Yeah, and it takes you back.
Better. It does take you back. I also love these little nuggets that she puts in here that help us to learn a lot more about the times that these kids are living in. Because on the one hand, like I said, it's extremely relatable and things that were true over 100 years ago are definitely still true today. But there's this little, you know, contextual things that we get to peek into how their lives were. And I really love that as well. And yeah, like, there's a few things that I sort of looked up and I want to talk about as we get there. But
I was thinking like the lamplighter, like that's such a cool thing to think about and read about. And then like in the last section when they're the sleigh and they're like, they were so worried about what was going on. They're like, it was a real sleigh, but they didn't even notice. And I was like, can you imagine a real sleigh? Like
just going down the street.
That's crazy. So the first chapter was my favorite, I think, was chapter 5, The Ghost in the Attic. So funny. I mean, and these kids, things like this experience that they have right here is what bonds kids together, like siblings.
Yeah.
So it was just so cute how they were working together to scare this little boy that is clearly a pain in the rear end. Okay, so The Ghost in the Attic. I thought this was kind of cool too, that this lady, Miss Partridge, comes into the school like once a quarter, it seems like. And yeah, she visits once in the fall, once in the winter, and once in the spring. And they love it because they get to do something different than what they would normally do. But she like never changes what they do. So they always do the same art project. Like they either draw pumpkins, apples, or leaves, and it depends on what grade you're in, which one you're going to do. I was like, that would be so kind of boring. Like, you got nothing new for us, but they like her. And they like her because she's nice, which is funny because they talk about Mr. Allgood, who's the music teacher, and they call him Mr. Allbad when he's not around. Just funny that a really mean teacher's name is Mr. Allgood.
What I thought was funny is, yes, Mrs. Partridge, the art teacher, is very nice, but the kids get away with everything. They get away with everything, like even kind of bad behavior. And with Mr. Allgood, they don't like him because he's very strict, but they also, everybody behaves. So there's, I mean, including like Peter Frost will pull Janie's braids when Mrs. Partridge is there, but he will leave her alone when Mr. Allgood is there. So I don't know.
So you would think that she would like it when Mr. Allgood was there because he wouldn't bother her. I remember in elementary school one time, well, we would have music teachers, and the music teachers never had the same pull that any other teachers had. But like if we had a substitute music teacher, the boys in my class usually made them cry.
Wow.
I just remember being like, oh boy, here we go. Going to music. We have a substitute and this is not gonna end well.
Dang.
I know. We were mean. And I love it too when you get like, well, your younger kids don't go to school, but we'll get like a note home that says, we have a substitute. She wasn't very happy with the kids today. And we're like, what did they do to her? So she
Oh my
described it as
gosh.
probably like their substitute. That was like, because she didn't come in very often and the kids were like, we're gonna take advantage of this and be naughty. But one thing they like about Miss Partridge is that she tells them stories with the shades lowered. So she kind of describes all the stories she tells them, which is so cute. After school, she runs home and I love this. She's so excited that she forgets to pray that nobody will buy the yellow house. So this is something she does every day. Like, let's pray that nobody's gonna buy our house. And when she gets home, yeah, and this is like this homey little aspects of the book that are homey. She gets home and the house smells like gingerbread. And so she grabs some and she runs out to the barn where the older siblings are. She goes out there and finds out that they are going to make a ghost to put in the attic to scare Peter Frost. They figured this time it's time to even the score with them. They like want to put him in his place and hopefully once they do, then he won't bother them as much. They end up making a pumpkin head for the ghost. And oh, this was so funny. Rufus has a collection of teeth that they can stick in the pumpkin, which is like, can
Which
you
is
picture that?
so disgusting.
And they're
Like,
tiny.
yeah.
They have to be like tiny. I don't know.
Well, except that they
Some
were
of
all
those.
kinds of sizes
Yes.
because
Oh,
they
you even
were,
have a horse tooth.
yeah, because the doctor who owned the house, Dr. Whitty, he was a dentist. They decided that he must have just pulled people's teeth and just thrown them out the window. And so that could have been grown people. And they're, yeah, apparently at some point he poured a pulled a horse's tooth. Yeah, so probably just all kinds of sizes of teeth. Ugh. In
Looks
all
so
states of
gross.
rot. Yeah,
No,
very, very gross.
that was my thought, is like these teeth are rotten too. Ew. And his mom was kind of, when he started collecting them, his mom's like, ugh. So he's doing it secret.
Yeah.
So gross. Once they get the teeth into the pumpkin head, then it looks pretty scary. Quote was, they began to feel a creepy uneasiness. Ew. Their own ideas scared them and sent prickles up and down their spines. So like they're even scaring themselves. They're excited.
Yeah, they're doing a pretty good job.
Yes, they're like this. So Sylvie is supposed to get Madame, which is the bus that their mom uses for sewing, and she's supposed to bring it upstairs. Mama leaves to go talk to somebody about work, and she tells him, now don't be gallivanting around through the streets after 8 o'clock. And Joey, please tie the garbage pail to the back porch, or some of those street hoodlums will be trying to tie it to the lamppost. And see that the rake and everything that's movable is locked in the barn. Now, I thought that was really funny that, like, on Halloween, she knows, like, we got to tie everything down or the kids are going to come and make messes. I don't know. It's like, we don't
Yeah.
do that anymore.
Not anymore, but I remember as a kid, like, I mean, I did enjoy Halloween, but I remember after the trick-or-treating was over, I would always be kind of scared because I didn't know what the teenagers around the neighborhood were going to do because there would be a lot of mornings after Halloween that we'd wake up and see that they'd come along and like taken people's pumpkins from their porches and smashed them all over the streets and like vandalized and things like this. And this was before any of me or my siblings were teenagers, but there were some really obnoxious things that went on for sure. And it was just kind of well known. It was like, hey, we're saying our night prayers and like, please protect our house tonight. You know, it's kind of bad news. I don't feel like that happens anymore. And maybe I'm wrong, but I just haven't seen that.
I think I remember seeing like pumpkins smashed in the morning, but not that would be it. And like now I don't think that really happens. The bigger things happen. They like steal your
Well,
packages off your porch or whatever. Once Mama leaves, then the house, they all kind of comment about how the house seems quiet and scary. And nobody now wants to go out to the barn to get the pumpkin head, but Joe and Jane decide that those two are going to go out there together. The funny thing, I think, also is the cat is watching them very strangely. She's like, what is going on here? This cat seems to have a personality of its own. So they bring everything together and they take it up into the attic, which has this hatch door. And in the attic, there are these like stuffed wildlife animals because it must have been the dentist that lived there before them, also did like taxidermy. The crazy thing is he left all that stuff there in the attic. I mean, usually when you move,
yeah.
don't you take that kind of stuff? But they take it all up there and they're trying to hurry because it's pretty darn creepy. Okay, I thought this was funny. They placed the scooter in the corner by the owl. Then they put Madame on the scooter, put the pumpkin head with its ominous gaping mouth on her headless neck, and draped the sheets about her. They tied one end of the rope to the scooter and made a loop to the other end in order to be able to pull the ghost around easily. The end of the rope with the loop they placed near the hatchway. It kind of reminded me of Home Alone when he's like dancing the fake people in front of the window. Like
Oh yeah.
they like rigged it up so that they could move the ghost around up there.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty smart. They get everything together. They have some scary masks that Sylvie had made for them. And that's when Peter Frost shows up because earlier they had told him that they had a ghost in their attic. And he's like, well, I want to see it. So he shows up and he's like, you don't have a ghost. And then they hear, you know, it's of course it's Halloween night. So they hear this howl and then they realize that they've left the cat up in the attic. But Peter doesn't know this. They're like, we're just going to go with it. So they all head up the stairs and then they go through the hatch. And as they all go up the ladder, Peter mentions that Joe should turn on his flashlight. And Joe's like, and scare away the ghost, I suppose. You know, a ghost isn't coming out where there's a light and all this many people. That is, unless there's a certain one around it happens to be interested in. Then they hear the cat howl again, and the Moffats are afraid that Peter is going to recognize that it's the cat, but he never seems to. So they all climb up into the attic, and Joe flashes the light in the corner onto the stuffed wildcat, and then onto the other corner where there's a stuffed owl, and then he shines it on the ghost, and she starts coming towards them. And she's dragging chains behind her, which I wonder if that was on purpose or I don't know. And then Jane yells, Peter Frost, Peter Frost. Ee! And Peter starts flashing the light on and off. Madame, the ghost, is like running all over the attic. Peter then thinks it's after him and he starts running all over the attic while the ghost is chasing him. And then he yells, let me go. And he can't find the hatch. And so he's still running all over the attic and he's tripping over all the stuffed real animals. And then finally he falls on the wildcat with Joe flashing the light, and then he can see where he needs to go to get out. So he gets up and he falls again. And then this time the ghost is on top of him, which at this point, isn't he like, okay, this isn't a ghost, it's laying on me.
I think he was in such a state of fear, he could not think logically at all.
Yeah. So he's like, he yells, she's got me, she's got me. And as he starts heading towards the hatch, then Rufus and Jane are now, they're scared. And so they're screaming, Mama, Mama. And Sylvie starts laughing. This is hilarious too. Joe's flashlight batteries die. Perfect timing. So he can't show any of them that none of it's real. Peter gets down the ladder. He tears through the kitchen. At this point, Mama is going to be home soon. And so they have to put everything back. So, like, I wonder if they're going to get, if they got, would get in trouble if she got home and found out what they had done. Maybe just
Probably.
for taking the Madame up there or something.
Yeah.
Rufus and Jane don't want to go back up in the attic, but they also don't want to stay in the kitchen alone. So the four of them go back upstairs. They put everything away. And then this is funny. When Mama comes home, she says, goodness. The witches certainly must be out tonight, all right. I just passed Peter Frost when he seemed like 60 up the street. He muttered some gibberish about a ghost being after him. And look at Catherine. She looks as though she's preparing for a wild night. And wife, goodness sakes, will you look here, please? Mama's voice went on from the grape room where she had gone to hang her hat. Just look here. Mrs. Shoemaker's dress has turned completely around. The hobgoblins must have done it. Then she just says, let's bob for apples.
I laughed so hard. I was reading this while it was really slow at work this week, and I was like, oh my gosh, people like looked in on me right now. They'd be like, what is wrong with her? I was laughing so hard. It was so funny. And the fact that Mrs. Shoemaker's dress was turned completely around on Madame is like, what is even going on? It
She's
was
been
so
like,
funny.
clearly something had messed with it. She probably knew what they had really done. Have you ever bobbed for apples?
No, I never have. I used to want to because you'd always see it in like the old movies or you read about it or whatever until I realized like there is so much grossness in that water. I have no desire to anymore. Have you?
Yeah, when 8 or 9, I went to a Halloween party at my cousin's house, and we bobbed for apples and we tried to like bite donuts off a string and did all that stuff. Nowadays, there's no way you would bob for apples because, ugh. But at the time, we used to have fun when we didn't care about germs.
I know, seriously. And like nobody was worse off, really.
But yeah, I remember going to their house and having this like, I mean, now I would say it was like an old school Halloween party. super fun. And I think, I mean, that might not be the only time. I swear there was a school, wait, I didn't go to this school, but there was a school in our neighborhood that did like a Halloween party on Halloween, like a carnival. And they'd have like a haunted house and they would have all those kinds of activities. And I'm pretty sure we did that there too. And it was like the place to go. Everybody went to this school, participate in this carnival that they did, which is funny because they did one this year at our school. And like we went and you couldn't even walk in there. There were so many people.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I was like, how did we? I mean, were there just less people in the world? I don't know. Because it wasn't like that
Or I mean, or maybe part of it too is just like less people knew about it because there was less. I mean, yes, there were less people in the world. Like, yes, that is true. But also, the word just didn't get out as easily.
then. Or maybe people didn't go out as much as we do now.
Maybe.
Like, I feel like when the holidays happen, everybody goes to everything.
Yeah. And like it's crazy and you just crowds everywhere.
We went to
But
Halloween Town, which is up in St. Helens, Oregon, this year. Well, we went 4 years ago and it was fantastic. And like, right, it must have been like 2019, right before the pandemic. But we went this time and we got there. We paid $20 to park. We waited for
Oh,
like
wow.
an hour and a half to get on a shuttle. And then
Oh
I
my
was like,
gosh.
we heard somebody talking about how much it cost. And I was like, to do anything there. And I was like, let's just go. It was
Really?
too many people. And it's like so sad that things are just so big now that
Yeah.
you can't participate in anything.
Well, and also, like, I don't know, for the venues themselves, like, put some limits on it, But I think for them, it just becomes all about money instead of like anything to do with the actual experience, where they would probably end up with ultimately more people if they limited the number that were there at a time. Yeah, I mean, just everybody would have a much better experience, but.
Yeah, we were Presley was upset, but I was like, I just had, we were going for a parade, really. And I was like, can you imagine when the parade is out? If we're waiting for an hour and a half to get on a shuttle to go into the town, imagine everybody that's in the town trying to get back to their cars when the parade's over. We'll never make it.
Oh.
We decided that we only like, we don't like to do things where there's people no more.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, like it's really difficult. Well, so when we were there in Oregon in July, everybody wanted to go to the parade in Cottage Grove because we'd never been when we'd lived there. We'd never gone there. And everyone's like, oh, let's go see it. We hear it's great. The crowds were awful. We had to park forever away. And then it was so difficult to find a spot to sit. And we ended up sitting like right where the sun was just like blasting us. We had to sit like behind these bushes because there was nowhere else to sit. And there were people just walking, everywhere and across us and over us. And I mean, everybody else has as much right as we do to be there, but it was just not as fun as I thought it would be because there were just so many people.
Yeah, and I
So.
don't feel like, okay, so we went to the Cottage Grove parade up for the 4th of July when Charlie and Charlie had 3 kids and they were little. And it wasn't like that.
Really?
But nowadays I'm like, we don't go to parades because it's either hot or cold. You can't find a place to sit, you can't find a place to park. It's just ridiculous. And so we just, I'm like, no more parades.
Yeah. And the fact that you'd have to like set your stuff out like 2 days before to even have a seat, and probably somebody would come along and move it anyway.
But
Yeah,
it's just
it's
sad
crazy.
that we've like come to this point where like things like that might stop happening because too many people try want to come.
Yeah, I know. It's true. I wanted to just quickly, maybe we've talked about it before, but we often in these old books see this term, like 60. He
Yeah.
was running like 60, or he was doing it like 60. And so it's this term that apparently has been around. It like stems from the term like 40, which has been popular since the 1600s, which means with great force. Going like 40 force, so it has nothing to do with speed. And so at some point it transitioned to going like 60. So it's not referring to like 60 miles an hour or anything like that. It just means with great force or vigor or with lots of enthusiasm. So it's not something that we use anymore, but I guess in 1848 is when like 60 really it oh, it was in the Oxford English Dictionary in 1848. So I think that's really interesting. We don't
Yeah,
use
I
it.
wondered what that meant, and I just assumed it meant like, but that doesn't make any sense because they didn't have any cars that would go 60 at that time.
Right. That's why it Has nothing to do with speed. Somehow it evolved from like 40, which when people would say that in the 1600s and on, it just meant with a lot of force. So I don't know how it evolved to like 60, but then that meant with a lot of force and vigor and enthusiasm. So chapter six is called the Sailor's Hornpipe. And so we get this insight into something that the kids do. And this also is very relatable because as a mother, you're like wanting your children to be involved in things and to learn things. And when you're poor, that's not always a huge option. And Mrs. Moffat, she works really, really hard, but she's a single mother and her livelihood is sewing dresses. And she's got four kids to provide for and a house to rent. And it's the early 20th century. And so it's hard. Her children take dancing lessons from a lady named Mrs. Chichester. And the way that she's able to do that is in trade. So she does a lot of sewing for Mrs. Chichester. So she gives the children their dancing lessons for free. And Mrs. Moffat is thrilled about this because, again, she's like, this is something my kids can learn to be cultured and graceful and help them improve as people. And I don't have to pay for it monetarily. We just do this trade thing. So it's a good situation as far as she's concerned. As far as the children are concerned, they don't love it. And actually, Rufus doesn't do it because there's another little boy in the dance class that they fight. Like they do not get along. And so ultimately, Mrs. Chichester is like, well, this other little boy, I think is it Huey Pudge? His mom does actually pay me money. So he's the one that has to be able to stay in the class. And Rufus, maybe he can join later. Sylvie loves the dance classes. She's very advanced. It's just she's very artistic. That's what she loves. Jane loves the thought. She has all these like grand fantasies and notions of how it should be. And then she gets there and realizes she's extremely uncoordinated. Of course, anybody who just starts dance is, but she just has this notion that she's going to just start and be amazing and beautiful and graceful. And it doesn't quite happen that way. And so she's just kind of disappointed and doesn't love it and makes her really nervous. She does love the shoes with the pom-pom, so that makes it worth it. Joey hates it, just hates it. In fact, most of the time, he's just trying to hide behind the piano. And he's found that if he works it right, he can spend the majority of each dance class hidden behind the piano. Well, the time comes for them to have a recital. And everybody's a little bit nervous about that, except for Sylvie. They're going to perform all the younger children. So, Joe and Jane and their class, they're going to perform on one night, and Sylvie will perform on another night. So, the night comes for this recital. And it turns out that Joe, he was supposed to dance this number called the Sailor's Hornpipe, but he's just awful at it. In fact, at one point, he talks about how Miss Chichester had spent 3 hours with him trying to train him and help him learn it, and he just couldn't do it. So she's like, you know, instead, I'm going to have you usher people. So you're going to have an important part in this. You're going to seat people in the right places, you know, important people up front. And you're also going to turn the pages for Miss Nippin, who's the piano player, you know, the accompanist for all the music. And he's like, okay, that's, you know, totally fine. I love that. Okay. So Jane is going to perform. She's really nervous because her hair was all done in curls and it was raining. So her curls are all like flat and straight. And she and her friend, they're going to perform to a Wild Rose, which I love. That's a piano number that I learned when I was little. So I've always loved it. It's beautiful. So she and her friend, Letitia, are really nervous about it. They're all going to sort of parade around in front of all the people who have come to see the show. So Joe's standing at the piano. Jane and Letitia are in this little parade, and Letitia is so nervous about their performance. She's like, I think I'm going to be sick. And as they're walking by Joe, Jane's like, she's going to be sick. But he doesn't even hear that because right then, Miss Chichester tells him, guess what, Joe? You have to perform the Sailor's Hornpipe because the other little boy that was going to do it, he's not here. And he's like, what happened? He just like didn't show up or something.
I didn't know why he just didn't come.
Chet Pudge, he'd never shown up. And he was like, I can't do this. And he didn't remember anything. He was terrified.
Well, he had stopped practicing it like weeks ago.
Yeah. So he's like, I don't even know it at all. Jane and Letitia, it's really funny because they're performing, and all of a sudden, Miss Chichester tells Miss Nippon, just hurry and end the music because Letitia and Jane are done, even though they're like the music is not done. They like got way ahead of the beat. It was really funny. But then it's Joe's turn, and he is supposed to go out and dance the sailor's hornpipe. And he's just wearing like his nice suit and these heavy boots. He is not dressed to dance at all. And Miss Chichester is kind of horrified, even though he's wearing what he was supposed to do for the job he was going to do. But she just hadn't thought through that. He goes out on stage, bless his heart. The fact that he still just like goes out and does it, I don't know. These kids are just next level. Miss Nippin starts playing his lively tune and he just starts to shuffle his feet. And it says he could see it was going to be far worse than he had expected, even. Stamp, 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 slap, slap. That's all he could remember of it. He just kept stamping his feet. And it says that his boots made a terrific clatter and his trousers kept up that whistling and squeaking. And he felt so dumb and so miserable. He couldn't even hear the music. He said that Miss Chichester kept time by clapping her hands and Miss Nippin kept playing the piano louder and louder, as if like them going louder would make him do better. But it just wasn't happening. Then all of a sudden, this little dog, its name is Sugar, and she's Sugar is the dog of Mrs. Mulligan, who is Chief Mulligan's wife. So Joe had actually seated them on the front row because he figured, oh, these people are important. So there's Mrs. Mulligan and her dog. And all of a sudden, the little dog had jumped up on stage with Joe and started dancing the whole time. He's dancing the sailor's hornpipe with Joe. And the two of them, they just like get in this groove and they start dancing and the audience is just going wild and they're loving it. And got to the point where it finally came to the end of the song, but everyone was like, encore, encore. And so they repeated the entire dance and Joe was like loving it and everybody loved it. It was great. So come to find out, this cute little dog used to be owned by a sailor. And so the sailor's hornpipe dance is apparently like an actual dance that sailors would do. And so it was just like second nature for the dog. And it was like, oh, I recognize this music. And it got up and started dancing with Joe. And at the end of the night, Miss Chichester goes to Joe and says, thank you, Joe, for your impromptu performance. You made a success of the recital. Everyone says you were the best on the program. You certainly were the hit of the day. And it's just so sweet and cute because, again, he's such a good sport and he was absolutely terrified, did not feel prepared at all. But the fact that he like didn't throw a fit, he got up and did it and it worked out really well. I love that.
Have you ever been in a performance where you're like, I'm not really ready for this?
I feel like that has happened a lot. It always just kind of works out. And I mean, sometimes it doesn't. There was this one time that in school, so I did a lot of singing through high school, but like towards the end of my senior year in one of the classes, it was my seminary class, and they wanted to do this end of year sort of like talent show type thing just within our classes. And I was like, I don't really have any desire to do anything. I feel like I sing and perform all the time. But these younger girls, they were a couple years younger, they were like, hey, we want to do this number and would you please sing with us? And I was like, all right, that's fine. And then these other girls that were also younger, they were like, we wanted to sing, would you accompany us? I was like, okay, I guess that's fine. Not a great accompanist, but the music was, it wasn't too difficult. Anyway, so this day comes. Like I said, I had never even planned on performing at all. But this day comes, I get up to accompany the girls that were singing, that I'm playing the piano for them. And I messed up so badly. So badly. It was off. I ended up just playing my right hand on it. Like, oh my gosh, how embarrassing. And then got up to sing with the girls, the other girls. And my voice was so, I think it was just so tired and so dry from all the other performing that I'd been doing that I went for the high notes and I like squeaked and screeched. Oh my gosh, like literally kids laughed because it was so bad. So that was a performance that did not go well.
And you remember it. I think my worst one was like my senior piano recital. And I was just like, done. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
I had the earlier in the year, I had auditioned for college with my music. And that was a big push and hard, you know. And I had a boyfriend my senior year. And it just wasn't a priority, like practicing the
Yeah.
piano. And so I remember going to the recital and like we had to have it all memorized and everything. Like,
Yeah.
and I was just like, well, we'll see how this goes. And I remember it didn't go great, but
Okay.
when I got through it,
But you get through it. I know. And you kind of go, all right, well, that wasn't the end of the world. But you think it will be, but it's not.
yeah,
So.
anyways, that's the only time I remember it being like totally not prepared. My other question is, like Jane, you know, she like thought that she was this great dancer, but then like when it came down to it, she was uncoordinated and horrible. So have you ever had like, is there something when you were a kid that you thought you could be really good at or you were really good at, but maybe not?
Just
You're like, I can do this, and then you go to do it and you're like, oh, that didn't go like it did in my mind.
I don't know if I that exactly, but I do remember like watching the Olympics and the ice skaters and the gymnasts and going, oh my gosh. And they make it look so easy that you kind of think, well, I could do that too. And then you just even try sliding around your house and doing the ice skating tricks that I can't remember any of their names right now. You go, oh, actually, nope. I couldn't do anything.
That's funny because what I was thinking is I thought I could be an Olympic swimmer. Like watching the Olympics, the swimmers make it look so easy. And I'm like, I could do that. And I'm like, I'm going to start training for the Olympics this summer. I wasn't a great swimmer. I could swim, but I wasn't great. Like in your mind, you're like, I got this. I can do
Yeah.
what they're doing. But then it
I will say that, like, not saying it's not possible, but something that I'm working on now, like physically, is just mobility, because like that is something that delays aging, is like the more you work on your mobility, the better you age, right? And so there's a lot of really, they're not really like influencers so much, but they have really good content online that they show you how to do these mobility things. But some of them, they just do it, and then instead of showing you how, and you're like, oh my gosh, they made that look so easy. I'm gonna try. Oh, well, I mean, we're talking about things that what they don't tell you up front is that they were like gymnasts for years, and they're still like in their 20s. They're not like almost 40, and they're doing these things, you know? And so I don't feel like that's totally upfront and fair, but still, it's good to try. And so actually the other night I was trying some of these things with my girls, and I can't remember what it's called. It's like a pistol squat, but it's like a thread through, so you're like threading your right leg all the way behind your left leg and squatting all the way down to the ground to where your butt touches the ground. So, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna at least try this. I don't think I can do it all the way. Yeah, I couldn't even come close. Like it was I can do a pistol squat, but I cannot do a thread through pistol squat. Nope. Like not
well,
even
that
close.
looks doable, and then you try. No.
Nope. Maybe eventually, but certainly not today. In fact, there was one thing that I was trying that I ended up like pulling a muscle in my neck.
Oh no, that's awful. It's just funny. Like I think our brains like trick us into thinking like we can do things, and then we try and we're like, oh, that was way harder than it looked.
Well, and again, I mean, I think it's good to have so many resources and information online, but it's also important to have like the honesty and the reality. Like, okay, these people doing it have been doing it for years. They're like trained gymnasts or you know, something very similar to where their bodies have been coached that way, and they have developed this over, again, years. So for us to expect that from ourselves, or to get down on ourselves if we can't do it yet, that's not healthy or fair.
Yeah, but honesty here.
Seriously, like don't act like everybody else should be doing this or physically can do this yet. Like it's going to take a long time of training. So,
So, chapter 7 is another sign on the yellow house. Now, this rings very true to me this week because I had COVID and then Charlie and David got COVID. Like, I feel like we have a sign on our house. Like, our neighbor yesterday was like, because he only knew I was sick. And he's like, are you feeling better? And I'm like, well, yeah, but you know, Charlie and David, I'm like, we're keeping it in the house though.
Yeah.
And I feel weird saying like, well, my son and my husband have COVID, but I'm done with it. So I'm okay. But anyway, I still feel weird being like
I
out.
know.
So Jane is at home. It starts out with her at home and she's polishing these lamps. There's another, I think that's another little like glimpse into their time, right? Like, this is how they see in their house. They have to like,
Kerosene lamps. Yeah.
yes. And so, and she's doing it because her mom can't fit her hands in there. So I'm like, what happens when they all grow up and there's nobody in the house that can like stick their hands down there to help?
Yeah. It does make you wonder if there's maybe special tools that they could
That they can
possibly
get.
get to reach in there. But
Yeah, that's true. As she's polishing these lamps, she can't stop crying because Rufus has been sick. And her mom is out going to fetch the doctor, Dr. Belknap. Usually mama's like she has these remedies that she uses when the kids are sick and they work. And nothing is working for him. And so She says, I have no idea what's wrong with him. So she has to go get the doctor. So Jane is watching out the window and hoping that somebody will come back. And that's when she sees the street lamp lighter come along. And it's so windy. So he has this like pole, you know, and he lights the end of the pole and then he like sticks it up into the street light. But it's so windy that he can't keep the flame going. And so he has to shinny up the what the lamp, the light, what you call it, the street light.
Yeah,
Light it by
the
hand
pole.
because, yes, because it's too windy. That's him. That sounds hard. I mean, back then, like they didn't have, I mean, that's what they did. They like climbed the pole so they could light it instead of like nowadays we'd have like a lift or. Oh, and this was a crazy memory for me. I loved it. So seeing him reminds her of the little match girl. Did your mother ever read you that horrible book?
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh, me too. I could picture the book in my mind, like when my mom, it was a Christmas book. I wonder if she still has it. I mean, she'd read it to us at Christmas. It was so sad.
So sad.
And so now she's thinking of herself as this poor little match girl huddling in some doorway with and lighting the last match with her poor frozen fingers. Gosh, I don't think we would read a book like that to our kids nowadays. I don't know. Like, don't you think it'd be
I
traumatic?
mean, I have read it just because it's one of Hans Christian Andersen's very famous classic fairy tales, and just because I think that it's one of those that helps to teach about sympathy and empathy and being aware of difficulties that people face. It is a really sad story,
Yes.
for sure.
My dad used to read this story from one of the church magazines called The Crazy on the Corner. And we
Oh.
like cry like crazy every time we read it. And it was the worst story ever. It was like this homeless person on a corner, you know, and the guy would go and say hi to him and stuff. And then he dies. And like they bring this guy that used to say hi to him is belongings, and he's like, "What are you even talking about?" And the homeless guy had had a piece of paper that said "friends," and it just had his that guy's name on it. It's awful.
So sad.
Yes, our Christmas stories we read were awful. So, anyways, I'm gonna have to read The Little Match Girl because it's been many years, and I'd totally forgotten about that story until I read it in here. So Dr. Belknap and her mom return, and this is when he decides that like Rufus has scarlet fever. He says, but it's just a mild case, so you know, I'll come check on you every day. Don't worry about it. But we have to put this quarantine sign on your house. And so now Jane thinks like we're so important that we have two signs on our house. You know, she's never seen two signs on any house on their street. And so Mama says, well, at least we now don't have to worry about moving for a while because nobody will think of buying the yellow house while there's a scarlet fever sign on the door. True. Nobody's going to come look at it. Nobody's going to come buy it. Rufus ends up being sicker than they had originally thought. Mama never really leaves the living room. She stays the whole time and she wears a mask that covers, I mean, we know I'm all about this now, covers her mouth and her nose. So the other kids, they all have jobs. Joe takes care of the coal. Sylvie manages the kitchen. Jane helps Sylvie in the kitchen, and sometimes she does the sweeping. And I thought this was hilarious that she came up with a method for sweeping while reading. They use a carpet sweeper. Do you remember those? We used to have, and they have them at church, I think. But she would run the carpet sweeper up and down in one spot until she got to the end of the page. And then she would switch to the next spot once she's on the page. That was really funny because then, like, I think about that, like, you didn't even have to think about it. You just, like, sat there and
Yeah.
did one spot while you read and then move on. But then
And then move on.
sometimes she would forget to move on because she got so into the book. And then when she would hear Sylvie come, she would go back to work faster. I gotta pretend like I was working here.
Yeah.
Joe has lots of jobs, but he really wants to become friends with the cat. And he's really gentle of animals, but the cat wants nothing to do with anybody but Mama. The cat also doesn't understand like why she can't go in the room. The kids are like keeping her out of there. This was interesting too, that every day the grocery boy comes to the back door and they yell the order out through the window or they go through a crack in the door. And then he comes back later with the groceries.
This was your Walmart delivery before there was Walmart delivery.
And like they couldn't even pass paper
Yeah.
because they were
So the boy
afraid.
had to memorize it.
So funny.
Or maybe he wrote it down. I don't know, but. Yeah, they couldn't pass him a list. They had to just yell it out to him.
Yes, that just reminds me of like wiping down our groceries when they would get
Oh
delivered.
my gosh.
Ridiculous.
Yes. We did some really stupid stuff a few years ago.
So Rufus eventually does start to get better, but now he's more difficult. So like it's like, why am I in bed? And he's harder to entertain. And so Mama's like having a hard time occupying him. So she tells him stories of her childhood growing up in New York. There's the story of the organ grinder and the monkey. And then we also learn that Mama had had an older sister and she had a lame sister. And the lame sister would like sit up in the window and didn't really get to go out. And then she tells the story of her bicycle and riding too fast on Fifth Avenue and like being afraid she's going to get arrested. The whole time, Rufus just wants to get up. He's like, why am I here? What is going on? Like, I always feel like that, like when my kids are sick, the first day or so is wonderful because they just sleep. Pay for it like the next couple of days.
Yeah.
They can't go anywhere. They don't feel that bad. I don't know. It's just
Yeah.
hard.
Then they're just antsy.
So I don't know if you wanted to go into more detail with those stories, but they were kind of funny. You just need to read the
They
book.
were. Yeah, definitely. So cute. So interesting though, because she talks about, you probably have illustrations in yours too, but she's talking about this bicycle that she had saved up money for. And she's like, well, our bicycles were different then, because there was the wheel in front was big and the wheel in back was small. And I'm sure everybody can envision that. You've probably seen pictures of that late 19th century bicycles with just this ginormous wheel in front and this tiny wheel in back. No idea what the thought process was behind that. But apparently she could go fast on it. But my point with the illustration is, in my book, the illustration is incorrect because it has a bicycle where both of the wheels are the same size, but she clearly says that they were different. But what I love too is how this policeman had stopped her on Fifth Avenue and was like, you're going so fast. She's like, I'm so sorry. And then she's saying to Rufus, she's like, he complained about the traffic problem all us bicyclists caused. I wonder what he thinks of all these newfangled automobiles. Like, right? And then she says, they'll never be as handsome as the horses and the broughams. I don't know how to say that word. But I kind of love that just because she echoes a thought that I've always had is like, I feel like it's probably so much cooler to look out at a street and see a bunch of horses and carriages and wagons than seeing a bunch of gas spewing cars. Like, and this lady actually lived it, and she says it was much more beautiful to see that than to see cars. So I'm not delusional. It actually was.
You know, wouldn't it be fun to just live like just for a couple of days in that time and just.
Yeah, just to experience it. And I'm sure that you would see how like very different and difficult that lifestyle was. But I think that there would also be a lot of beauty and simplicity. And yeah, it would just be very interesting.
It's interesting to think about that time because it's like you said, beauty and simplicity. And like in my mind, I think it wouldn't be simpler because you've got so much more work that you have to do, but yet it
Right.
was simpler. And the people, I
Simple
think,
in different ways. Yeah.
as our work has gotten easier and more automated, we've just made things more complicated.
Yeah, that's really true. And I think that really comes out in just the way that we see the little Moffat children, you know, how they have all this time to come up with funny ideas like the ghost in the attic, or just watching the world go by, or letting their imaginations wander and wonder what the chief of police is going to do. And very sure he's going to get them in trouble. Where I don't know if our kids even think about that anymore because they're so involved in all these things that don't really matter that much. And the next chapter too, I think is just, I love it
Yes.
because I think it illustrates that as well. Just that they're concerned about real things and important things, and they take personal responsibility, which I think is, you're hard pressed to find kids who do that anymore.
When they were talking about the, and this will move and take us into the next chapter, but like one of the things that Sylvie takes care of is like heating the irons for bedtime, you know, because she's managing the kitchen, so she's in charge of that too. These kids are concerned with being warm.
That is all consuming for
Kids
sure.
do not worry about.
And they did. They had to put those little irons in the bottoms of their beds, or they would be freezing cold at night. Oh, because they only had limited heat sources in their house. Yeah. And that's really what we're talking about in chapter 8. It's called the coal barge. And so there's several things happening here. First of all, it is very difficult times. We talk about it being simpler, but financially it was difficult. Again, Mrs. Moffat is a single mom, but it's hard times for everybody. Early 20th century. We don't know exactly what year this is. A year or two down the road is when Rufus M comes out, and during Rufus M, the soldiers ship out for World War I. So this has got to be 1916, 1917, maybe, and around there. So it's just difficult times for a lot of people. And it's winter, so it's really, really cold. And this is Connecticut too. So East Coast, you've got that just cutting cold from the humidity as well. So it talks about the quarter meter ate up the quarters for gas so quickly. And so I looked that up because I was like, what does that even mean? So apparently there was a time when, especially, tenants, they would have these gas meters in their house to where if they wanted the gas to heat their house, they had to feed quarters into it. And so I don't know if this was just like another way for the renters to earn money, or, well, actually, what I read was that the thought was that this was a way to limit fossil fuels. Even at this point in time, they were like, all right, we're gonna be, eco-friendly. But they'd say, well, make sure you don't ever let the gas meter actually run out or stop, because then you'll be in big trouble. Basically, like, your house could burn down or something. I don't know exactly, because I don't know exactly how it works. But so the Moffats are living in his house, and they have to like constantly monitor the gas meter and feed quarters into it in order to keep it like heating their house. And obviously it didn't heat the entire house, but some of it did. So it says that the quarter meter ate up the quarters for gas so quickly. And coal, a lump of coal is as valuable as a gold nugget, Mama said. And then the other hard thing is that Mama is a seamstress. She's an excellent seamstress, and everybody in town comes to her for that. But in hard times, people are like, well, I can do without a custom-made dress, because this is also sort of a turning point where stores are beginning to carry already made dresses. And they're much cheaper because the quality is not as good. Most of the times that we live in, like the quality is not as good as they probably were at that point in time when you could get a custom made dress. But women were like, well, it's not as good. We recognize that, but it's cheaper. So if I need a dress, I can go to the store. And so just not as many people were ordering dresses from Mama and from Mrs. Moffat. And so she was pinched. Well, finally, this big order came in. They were going to do all these, like, someone had decided that the little boys in town should organize into a naval reserve corps. Joe was in it, and Mama was to make all the white sailor suits. So there was going to be 50 of them. And so that's a good thing, because that's a big job and it's going to pay her quite a bit. But until she gets paid, they're very, very pinched. So one day, Mama gives a $5 bill to Joe. Okay, so this is another thing I looked up. $5, I just said 1915 because I wasn't sure. $5 back then is the equivalent of $146 today. So she hands this $5 bill to Joe, which again, remember, is the equivalent of like $146 today. And she says, this is the last cash that we have until I get paid for the sailor suits, but take it and go get a bushel of coal. So he and Janie, Joe and Janie set out there. He's got his little sled. They've got their burlap bag. They set out to basically the wharf, right, where the coal man is. And they get all the way there. It's getting to be late evening. It's extremely cold. And they make a couple stops on the way. They see like oranges and apples, tangerines, and grapefruit in a store window. And they look at it so hungrily. But that's definitely a luxury. And so they can't afford that. So they get to the coal man and they say, could we get a bushel of coal? The guy fills up their bag with coal. He says, okay, that's going to be $1.20. I looked that up. So it wasn't the full $5, but I looked that up. $1.20 is like something like between $35 and $40 today. That's a lot. Like that's expensive. So we think about times back then. We're like, oh, we wish that we lived back then because things were so cheap. Well, no, they weren't. We would not spend $40 on a bushel of coal today. Like, no.
How long would that have lasted?
I don't know. I don't know. They said that, their little coal bin in the house, when it was half full, it wouldn't even last through the night. I don't know how big that was. But I mean, that was their main, I think it was their main heat source for keeping their stove going. So they had to keep it going all the time. So I don't know. I don't know how long a
Yeah, and she
bushel would.
said, like, Mama said that coal's like gold. I was thinking, like, so maybe getting a lump of coal in your stocking back then wouldn't have been such a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. It's actually a gift. Yeah, like a real gift. So the man charges them, and Joe goes to pay for it, and he cannot find the $5 bill anywhere. And it's supposed to be in a little black purse. It's nowhere. He's searching all of his clothes. You can imagine he's just frantic. He's sick to his stomach. He's like, what has happened? He's like, Janie, maybe you have it. And of course, he knows that she doesn't. And she's like, I don't. But she looks anyway. The coal man just takes the bag, empties it out, gives them back the bag. He's like, well, see ya. And they are just so distraught. So they trace their steps so carefully on their way back. You referred to earlier how like a sleigh went down the street, and it's something they'd seen, but not very often. So it normally it would be a novelty to them. They're like, oh,
A
there he
real
is in a sleigh,
sleigh.
but yeah, instead of an automobile or a trolley or anything like that. But they are so focused on trying to find this little black purse that they don't even notice the sleigh. And of course, it's getting darker. And so every shadow looks like the black purse. They're looking everywhere. Finally, they're turning into their house, their little yellow house on New Dollar Street, and they haven't found it. And they're just sick to their stomachs. They can't believe it. They go into the house, and there's little normal sounds of Rufus playing marbles, and their mom is sewing, and Sylvie's singing, and I think she's making dinner. And they just feel like very detached from everybody. Like they don't belong because they feel like they've done this horrible thing in losing the money, but mostly Joe. And like I said, Joe absolutely takes responsibility for it. He's like, I've done this horrible thing and I lost the money. And he just tells them, everybody can see there's something wrong. Mama stops her sewing and comes in, and he says, I lost the money. Mama says, I lost the money. And Joe says he'd never felt so miserable in his whole life. And this just really stood out to me because I feel like we see so often. I mean, my kids do it. They do something wrong and they try to make it seem like it wasn't their fault. It's like, no, it is your fault. And that's fine, but you need to take responsibility for it. We can deal with this, but let's start with you taking responsibility for it. But he doesn't ever try to blame anybody else. He's like, it is my fault. And he felt so horrible. And in fact, he's like, okay, well, maybe it'll snow a lot tonight and I'll go shovel sidewalks and I can earn the money back. Mama's like, okay, if it's gone, it's gone. I'll just stay up extra late tonight and probably finish some of the sailor suits tomorrow. We'll make the coal work for tonight that we have, and maybe I can get paid for the ones that I finish. And then he feels even worse, which again shows a lot of maturity and responsibility. He's like, my mom is going to have to work even harder because I lost this money. And he's just feeling so guilty and so bad. He's just staring straight ahead at the mantle. And all of a sudden, this little black purse comes into focus. And he sees that the little black purse is on the mantle. He must have put it there when he was warming his hands right before they went. And he, oh my gosh, you. She's built it up. Eleanor Estes has built it up, built it up, built it up to where you can feel the relief that he feels when he finds this purse. And Mama even says, look, you can wait and go before school and get the coal if you want to. He's like, I don't want to. I want to go right now. I want to go get the coal right now. We need it. And so he grabs the purse. Janie goes with him. They run to the coal man. The coal man was actually shutting up for the night. He's like, it's too late. And but Joe is like, no, we were here before and now we have the money and we need it right now. And so the man is like, all right. And so he fills up their coal, takes the money. Joe very carefully makes sure that he gives them all their correct change back, and they get back to the house and all is well, and come home to this nice warm dinner. And all Mama says, just too bad you had to go twice. She wasn't mad about anything. She didn't make a big deal about it, but it got taken care of and
He's
that's
like,
all.
don't care if I had to go twice. At least we found the money. And I mean, I
Yeah.
can't imagine sending a kid with all the money in the world that you have.
Yeah. The only bills that you have. Yeah.
Like, here, go. And then he comes home and he lost it. I'd be like, oh my gosh.
I know. I thought about that. And then I was like, well, but I guess if there was no way to break it and she's got to keep working so she can get those sailor suits done. So it was like that was her only option,
And they were going to be cold because they were going to run out of coal. Like, it reminds me of when we've had ice storms here and we lose power or whatever, and
Yes.
no heat in your house, and it's like you have no idea how much the heat does for you, right? Like, I mean, you just something, it's just there and you don't think about it, but like when it's gone, Your house is cold.
It is cold. It's really cold and you're really miserable. And that's all you're thinking about is like how to get warm, how to make sure the kids stay warm. For me, I don't function very well. I'm just like, all right, guys, get out all the sleeping bags, all the blankets. We're just snuggling on the sofa and reading because that's all that I can think to do.
Years ago, when we had Sydney, so we had three kids, and I was proud. I don't think I was pregnant with Audrey yet, but we lived in this house in Sandy, Oregon, where the heat, the first month, we got the heating bill, and we're like, oh my gosh. And the funny thing is, I think we pay more for heat now every month. But at the
Well,
time, it
it's
was
all
like,
relative though. Yeah.
yes, it was like $380 or something. And I was like, okay, no more heat. And so we turned the heat off or way down or something. And I remember, like, at night, we all five of us were in this huge house. All five of us just sat on the couch with blankets around, like, just cuddled because we were freezing. I was like, how many blankets can we put on each of our beds so we don't need heat?
Yeah, seriously.
We
Yeah,
got oil
and
heaters and stuff, like,
did you?
trying to find other ways that weren't as expensive
So
as you'd think.
expensive.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was
And
cold.
awful.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, well, we can't afford heat, guys, so this is gonna be
Did
fun.
you guys have a fireplace or anything?
I think we did. Yes, we did. I'm pretty sure we used it. I'm trying to remember. It was a rental house, so, and I mean, we lived on property where there was wood, so I'm sure we had wood.
Yeah.
But yeah, we used the fireplace, but it didn't, it was a big house. Like, it.
Yeah, like there's no way it's, I mean, and that's the other thing you realize is like for a lot of people not that long ago, like the only way to heat a house was the fireplace in each room, you know?
Can you
Holy moly.
imagine?
No.
And then we lived in my parents' house. We rented my parents' house, the house I grew up in for years. We couldn't afford the heat there either. And we had a fireplace. And we did okay in that house, like with the fire in the main part of the house. And then we had like little heaters in each of the rooms. I just remember though, when we first turned off the heat in that house in Sandy, we were like, you can see your breath.
Yeah. Oh, geez. When we lived in Gresham, the house we lived in, it was old. And it's just sort of a pattern with us wherever we lived in Oregon. Like it would snow and the power would go out. And so we had no heat for like a couple of days. And this house, it did have a fireplace, but it wasn't very effective at all because it was a decent sized house. And the fireplace was like way back in the corner or something. Anyway, so cold, so cold. But finally, when the power did come back on, I remember the power had been on for probably 12 hours or something. So the majority of the house was warm. But I remember opening some cupboards and reaching my hand in, and the cupboards inside were still freezing cold because the heat hadn't gotten in there yet. I was like, oh, that's what we've all been feeling for
Totally.
anyway.
I mean, they were talking about like traveling to the wharf, and it was like ice outside, and
Yeah.
they were using a sled, so it was cold.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, good stuff.
I loved it. I love this book. I don't know where it's been all my life.
Yeah. And isn't it, this is one that, like I said, I've read it a few times to my kids and I'm like, I need to read it again, especially as they're teenagers. And there's sometimes like these sort of entitled attitudes and like, I don't want to take responsibility. And it's like, let's read this. Take a lesson from because it's a true story.
This little the last little section seems shorter than the rest, but with Christmas and everything, have you had any time to read?
Not tons. I finished The Diamond Eye by Kate Quinn. I just finished that yesterday. It was really, really excellent. I did start a book that I got myself for Christmas. I think I'm so weird. I got myself Killing the Witches by Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard. So that's like their newest in the series, in the Killing series. And actually, Jenny Daniels recommended it to me. And I was like, yes, thank you. So I'm only one chapter in, so maybe I shouldn't even count it, but that is what I am currently reading, and it's very good so far and disturbing, obviously, but it's history.
Good and disturbing. That's hilarious. Okay, so I have a funny story to tell you about this book I'm reading. So it's called, at the end, so it's called Mother Daughter Murder Night by Nina Simon. I think it's Nina Simon. And it's like this mother and her daughter and granddaughter, and like the mother and daughter don't have a very good relationship, but the mother come ends up with cancer. And so the daughter's like, you have to move in with me and I'll take care of you. And so, you know, because their relationship isn't very good, it's kind of not a great situation. But something happens with the granddaughter. She's like a kayak instructor. She takes people on kayak tours, and she finds a dead body on her kayak tour. And the police are kind of like blaming her. And so the grandma who has cancer is like, I'm figuring out who did this. And so she doesn't think the police are doing a very good job. And so she basically starts their own investigation. And it's really cute. I really, really like this book. Interesting. It's like 13 hours long, which is kind of long. And
Oh,
I'm like
wow. Yeah.
enjoying it. But I was telling my mom about it in the car the other day because she was asking what I was reading. And Presley was in there with me. And she goes, first I got, I said, it's really cute. And she goes, it doesn't sound cute. That's not a cute book, mom. Like, what are you talking about? And then I was telling my mom about how she had cancer. And Presley goes, well, she should go see the kids' cancer doctors. And I was like, what is she even talking about? And then I realized on YouTube, there's all these commercials for St. Jude's, like all the time. It's like,
Oh, how
right?
funny.
Constantly, it's the St. Jude's.
Interesting.
And I was like, I was telling my mom that. I'm like, oh, well, she sees the St. Jude's commercials on YouTube. And Presley
Yeah.
goes, you know what the awful thing about St. Jude's is? And I was like, what? And she goes, I end up bald at the end.
Oh my gosh. Oh
I was like, getting into the minds of these children are
Yeah.
like, had no idea why they were bald.
Yeah.
It was like, that is an awful place.
Yeah.
No hair. Anyways, and so I was explaining chemotherapy to her and like, you know, how well they're sick. And so they go, and then the treatment that they give them to make them better makes their hair fall out, and that's why they're bald. And she goes, well, why are they happy at the end then? And I was like, because they're not sick anymore.
Fair questions and fair concerns, though. Like, that would be so confusing. Seriously.
Was so
Oh
cute.
my gosh.
I was
That's
like,
really.
just dying. She's like, the awful thing about St. Jude's is they come out with no hair. I would totally recommend this book,
Hey,
Mother
cool.
Daughter Murder Night. It's just entertaining. And I, after we did our top 10 last, well, a couple of weeks ago, now I realize that I read fluff and you read hard stuff. So,
Yeah. Oh, I don't think that's really true. You read plenty of hard things,
I
but
know,
you're
but I
better
read.
at mixing in some things that are really enjoyable too. And that probably helps keep you happy and sane.
It does. But yeah,
I do that
super
a
good
lot.
book. I think I heard the author on a podcast and I was like, oh, that sounds good. And so I put it on hold for a month,
Okay,
you know, and then
finally
he
got it.
comes in and you're like, I don't remember this.
Where did you even get the idea for that?
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. I wish on the Libby app there was a way to make notes on the books.
Yeah,
So you
that
could
would be
be
a good
like,
idea.
I heard about it from this or
Yeah.
whatever. Because you wait for so long. I guess I could make a note in my phone, but oh
Then
well.
you'd have to remember to go back to the note.
That's right. Okay, so next week we're going to finish the Moffats, chapters 9 through 12. What is our book after the Moffat?
I was just looking To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh,
Ooh, that's exciting.
I've never read that. I mean, it's probably hard, huh?
I would say it's like mid. Yeah, it's not going to be nearly as hard as a lot of the books that we've done.
Okay.
But it's not going to be as easy as like the Moffats or there's a lot to talk about.
The
That's the
book I need
difficult
to read,
thing, but
so I'm excited because then I can say I've read it.
absolutely.
We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss The Moffats by Eleanor Estes, chapters 9 through 12. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.